What I intend to do now in preparation for a more analytic talk about the orbits and things is give you a small presentation of the way in which this Plummer model works numerically, to show you what this sort of stuff does and to impress you with the fact that I have already reiterated that there's really no such thing as equilibrium in these systems, even if you start with something as nice as this. Let me first give you the results and then show you what the code actually does when you run it. This will look rather silly on the, or sound rather silly on the MP3, because of course you don't have the images to go with it, so possibly I'll put them on the web so that at least you have something to go by. Right. What I should like to do is give you the result of fairly exact computation of a Plummer sphere in two cases, one in which we have 2,000 sample points and one in which we have five times as many, to just simply show you where the difference lies. As we will talk later about the general family of which the Plummer model is a case, the so-called polytropic distributions, let me give you the initial conditions. This is the projection of this Plummer model. Let's see if this goes down a little further. No, it doesn't. In which you have 2,000 points spherically distributed according to the potential that I had just indicated. To give you an idea about the relative sizes, the distance from here to the edge of the image is five times the Plummer radius B. All right, so the Plummer radius itself is approximately so large on the screen. Now, when you zoom in on this a little bit, this is what you get. This is zoomed in by a factor 5, and it looks relatively reasonable, all right? You can already indicate from this what I had promised over here, that the density distribution in the center is close to homogeneous. The Plummer radius on this scale is approximately so large. All right, so inside here, you get closer and closer to an actually mean spherical distribution. The fact that sometimes, such as over here, you have points that are relatively close together is, of course, purely due to Poisson noise. Right, there is no attempt being made keeping stars out of each other's way. Now, to impress on you the fact that the velocity structure is important, let me tell you how the initial velocities are chosen here. What I have done is give every star at this position here a velocity, the absolute value of which, the speed, is directly proportional to the circular speed in the Plummer model. And the circular speed in the spherical models are gm divided by r, and the velocities, well, not on the blackboard anymore, but they're in the book. And the direction of the velocity then was picked random in a sphere around that point. All right, you simply sit here and you determine what the local circular speed is, and then you launch this star in an arbitrary direction with that speed. With one proviso, I already know that if you do that, then you will tend to blow up the system, at least to make it a slightly bigger than you start. And the reason for this is fairly straightforward. You can already see that from here. You have these two turning radii over here. If you give the star a purely circular velocity in a plane that is arbitrary, then you end up with a more or less stationary situation, you'd think. If you give it any radial component at all, the orbit will be thickened between these inner and outer turning radii, and therefore the entire system will become that much bigger. And therefore, I've chosen to start the stars with an initial velocity that is equal to the tangential circular speed times a correction factor for which I've taken 0.5, in this case just 1/2. The velocity structure is fairly apparent from here. This is the initial conditions, where here you have the radius in Plummer radii, and here you have the velocity, and already you can see that the velocity turns over inside this envelope over here, which is of course understandable because that is precisely what you had expected over at this point. Most of the stars are of course close to the center, and this is where the whole thing starts to turn over. Now, let us see first how that velocity distribution develops as we switch on the computer and let those n-bodies do what they need to do. This is at 5 time units after the start of the simulation, and the time unit here is equal to 1 in 1 in these units. So you take r divided by the circular velocity, you get a time unit, which is basically the period divided by 2 pi. You see that the envelope over here still is recognizable, although over here you see a number of stars escaping above the envelope of circular rotation. And there again, that is understandable because that is due to the star-star interaction in the high-density region close to the center over here. When we go to 20 time units, that becomes even more apparent. So evidently what you get here is a superposition of two velocity structures. One is the initial velocity structure, which is still very recognizable over here, but quite a few of these stars have what you might call thermalized. They have now started to move about in that central potential, encounter one another, encounter inhomogeneities, and thereby they have randomized their velocities much more. Besides which, of course, you get a high thermal tail over here. You see that the velocity now gets a tail that sticks out above the original envelope over here. And that, of course, in thermodynamic terms, means that the effective temperature of that part of the distribution has increased to the extent that the energy per particle has now become bigger. This is the situation that we get after 100 of those times. So that is approximately 20 crossing times. And even though at large distances here, you still see something that is barely recognizable as the original envelope over here, you already see also that there is a streak that goes in this direction. So this population that used to be here a moment ago has more or less disappeared, and instead we get a band that looks like something approximating a straight line with a lot of scatter around it in this direction. Now that is understandable for two reasons. One is that effectively when you have a velocity that is proportional to a distance, you get what you might call a Hubble expansion. Right, so this is an overall expansion of the whole system. It's sort of gradually on this time scale of 100 crossing times. And large distances, so this is already 30, 40, and 50 Plummer radii, starts to slowly swell up. Even so, there is a lot of scatter vertically around this, and that is, of course, thermal scatter, which is simply due to the fact that the stars, by interacting with each other and with interacting with inhomogeneities in this clump, have started to scatter in velocity space. Now, to give you an indication as to what this looks like if you do not look at the overall... Let me phrase that differently. What I've taken here is the mean distance of the distance of the star from the center of the original distribution and the absolute value of the speed. Right. Now, those, of course, are not the two that are connected in an equation of motion. It's not the radial speed and the radius that are connected, but it is the three components of the velocity that are connected in the equation of motion. So let us see what those components look like if we consider just one of them. Since the system is spherically symmetric, I've given only one example, and that is the velocity in the x direction, that is transverse on the projection over here. This is, again, the original starting distribution, and this is the velocity distribution that you get. Plus or minus, of course, because the star can go both ways, and this is the velocity in the x direction. Everything is centered on rest, okay, which is over here, with a thermal spread in this direction, and it is scattered over, well, approximately 3 or 4 here, which is 3 or 4 times the Plummer radius. Again, you discern an envelope. This diamond shape over here is, of course, exactly the same, but then in positive and negative directions as that envelope, that velocity envelope we saw earlier. You will also notice that the peak is smaller here than it was previously, where it was about 0.55, and that is, of course, we have 3 independent directions in velocity. Now, if you then look at the situation we get after these 100 time steps, you get this situation in velocity space. Again, in the center, you have a clump that is rather bigger than it used to be, and that's due to this thermalization I was talking about, the stars scattering from one another, off one another, and start scattering off random clumpings inside the sphere. But you also have this diagonal over here, and there again, that is your Hubble expansion that you will notice only at bigger distances. It doesn't really look like a very nice straight line here, so it's really quite astronomical. But if you just quarter these parts over here, it is straightforward and obvious that there is many, many more points here and there than there is there and there. So you do definitely have this overall expansion. But if you were to concentrate just on the center over here, within a radius of about 15 Plummer radii, you would find it extremely difficult to discern any preferential trend there. So this expansion is mostly relegated to the outskirts of the system over here. To show that the spherical symmetry is overall preserved, I show you a plot here of the velocities in the x direction and in the y direction, and I guarantee you, if you were to do the numbers from the computer over here, you would see that that is also true if you were to take the z velocity into account. So the integrator is good, and the whole thing is sort of the overall spherical symmetry of the system is preserved, even though on the large scales and radii bigger than 20 or 30 Plummer radii, it slowly starts to swell up. To show you what the center looks like, this is the center of the cluster as it starts, with a scale that is so large that this is approximately, from top to bottom, is approximately the Plummer radius. This is the situation that we get after 100 characteristic timescales. So you see that there is still a clump over here where everything is looking quite nice and thermalized, but even the center has swollen up somewhat. One of the things that becomes apparent, and that is definitely a useful thing to do when you do numerical exercises, if we decide to do that in parallel with these classes, is to see what the consequences are of enlarging the number of bodies in your system and keeping absolutely everything else the same. Now, in the case of a globular cluster containing approximately 1 million stars, doing the simulation properly is already at the limit of what we can currently do with the very advanced computer systems that Portugis Swart and his colleagues are building. That is to say, if you do less, then that means that a star is no longer a star here. Every point in this simulation represents a large number of stars. So here, for instance, is the case that I've just presented to you earlier. You have 2,000 points at time zero. I've called them stars in the plot here, but actually that is boasting. I mean, every point over here corresponds to approximately 500 solar masses in this kind of simulation. I'm going to show you the difference between this run and that one, which is identical, with the exception that there's now 10,000 points rather than 2,000. So it's 5 times as many. I've run this particular simulation during the break of the lectures today, which took about 10 minutes, right? So this gives you an idea about how nice these computers work these days. And this is with a numerical integrator that is really doing quite well, specifically designed for this purpose. When the 10 minutes were over, I just gave it, rather than a number of steps, I gave it a number of minutes because I wanted to finish the computation before class would resume. This is at time 71.9, It is exactly the same scale as previously. So you can see that this thermal clump has really become bigger. And this is exactly the same situation now for 10,000 stars. By itself, if you switch between these two, you might say, well, you know, there isn't really much difference. The overall density distribution is still very much the same. And I guarantee you that if you were to plot the computed density profile here and the computed density profile there, taking into account that there are five times as many points in here as in the previous one, you get two things that are within the scatter, within the noise, are in fact reasonably identical. It's different, however, when you start to look at the velocity distribution. This is a plot of the radial velocity versus radius, sorry, the mean velocity versus radius. And again, you see what we have seen in the previous simulation. You have a remnant of the initial conditions with this envelope of the starting velocities, plus this band, this linear-like band, that indicates that over here you have something like a overall Hubble expansion of the whole system. This is for 2,000 points. You take five times as many, this is what you get. And I hope that you agree with me that this is drastically different in a qualitative and quantitative sense. Although the envelope over here is still the same, you can see it in both cases, that's not so surprising. And although this expanding clump over here is also present, you can see that there and there, and it doesn't really look very much different, except that you can easily believe that over here in this part of the plot you have five times as many points as you do previously. When you look here, you see a drastically different structure. This looks as if there is substructure starting in this system. And that is understandable, because we had already indicated over here that in this particular model, the potential is quadratic plus a constant in the center. In other words, the mass distribution is homogeneous. But you already know from what I mentioned to you in the first lecture, if you didn't know it otherwise, that a homogeneous, a system that is homogeneous to start with and is subject to gravity only, is unstable. There's no such thing as stability in a homogeneous gravitational system. So subclumps would start to form. And apparently, at this time here, which is 73 step units, some substructure has already started to form. The absence of velocities over here and the over-density of velocities over there already indicate that there must be something like a clump at this particular radius that is systematically orbiting around the center of mass of this particular system. Part of the reason I wanted to emphasize this is in order to, as it were, give you a preliminary feel for what we're going to do later in these lectures, particularly when we start to enter the chapters over here. And that is to say, we also have to consider velocity space. In other words, phase space, where we have velocity and position simultaneously plotted, is something that is going to be very important here. Now, what I'm going to attempt to do now is to show you how this works, because that will help you form a little bit a better impression as to whether it is useful for you or not for us to rig up some additional work with Mattia and with Jeroen on numerical work. So if you bear with me for a moment, I have to change this ever so slightly. Good. Go. Now, what I will try to do is to is to run an instance of the N-body code that does this. Now, you have to bear in mind that this is research stuff and it is not really meant to be user-friendly by itself, so you will need a little bit of a learning curve before you start. In order to recognize your output, you have to give this thing a name, right? So I've got a trial, I don't care what its name. And the code is set up in such a way that you can run it even without filling in the small details, right? So there is a sort of skeleton thing where the computer makes the choices for you to a certain extent. However, I am, as it were, the expert here. And there is a possibility of starting from the output of a previous run, obviously, because if your thing breaks off for one reason or another, you may want to resume it. The number of stars is the first that you have to specify. All right, so let's take 4,000. That's a cool number. I've programmed in a certain number of possible initial conditions, a homogeneous sphere, a homogeneous sphere in which the orbits of the stars are planar circular, the plumosphere that you've just seen, a circular disk, a disk that has Keplerian rotation, and then various other possibilities, including two spheres that are orbiting one another and then form a central system. And even just for the fun of it, I allow people to start with a homogeneous cube to see how soon you lose the cubical form here due to the interaction of the stars. Now, for our purposes, we will start with this Plummer model, which is this thing over here. And because the positions of the stars are set by a random number generator, I give the user the opportunity to specify how that random number generator starts. The reason for doing this is that frequently when doing numerical exercises and experiments, you will make certain that you start with exactly the same initial conditions, even though there is some randomness in there. If I were to allow the computer to pick a random number from its clock, for instance, you would never be able to run the same thing twice, right? So that is not wise. You give it a number, it doesn't really matter what it is as long as... Oh, by the way, everything you do type in here is written to a log file so that you can consult it later. All right, the computer tells you that the Plummer radius in this unit is unity, and then you get a choice for reducing the initial velocities. I already mentioned when starting things like there, there would be a multiple of the circular velocity that we start with, and let us take 0.5, okay? It's a number between 0 and 1. The radius of your initial sphere is how large your system is compared with the Plummer radius. Right. Now, in all the previous simulations that I've shown you, I've taken 5 times the Plummer radius. Right. We can do that. We can take something bigger, just simply to see what difference it makes. Okay. So let's take 10. It tells you what in these dimensionless units, where the product of the mass and the gravitational constant is unity in this case, because there's no point in specifying solar masses here. It makes no sense. You get to specify the smallest physical time step because sometimes during an n-body computation, the stars get to be so close together that they take infinitesimally small time steps and the machine would be stomping away without doing much good, right? So you give it a lower limit to the physical time step, 10 to the minus 10 units or something like that. The maximum physical time already showed to you that we had integrated previously to 100 time steps. All right, so just give the 100 over here. I have checkpointed this thing in such a way that it already knows how long the computation takes on this particular machine, which is 3.25 gigahertz 4-core machine. All right, that will need to be checkpointed with other systems that you run on. So let's give it, I don't know, 5 minutes is exaggerated, but let's see. You don't want to output every time step. So in this case, I'm just going to tell it to give 2 steps, so that will expect to give me 50 files that I can then do. Now, you see how the thing is running, and already to people like myself who come from ancient days, this is totally impressive, okay, that a computer like this can... Most of the time here is spent writing the data to disk, not even doing the computations, all right? And even you can see it running as we proceed. On a good professional system, such as what Potahi Swart runs on, this goes literally tens of thousands of times faster. All right, but that is, of course, not for a simple laptop computer like this. All right, so it should be coming to an end. And let me now show you what some of these things look like. I have a little piece of code that picks up the data from this. We get points in phase space. And the full name is, let's say, trial for zeros is the first thing, .txt. Okay. So it reads automatically how many stars there are in this file, and you get to specify how big your sphere is on your plot. what the color of the points is, what the choice of the window size. On the physical map, we took 10 units. All right, so let's take 5 here. All right. So this is what you then get. And effectively, these are your initial conditions. All right. Let's zoom out a little bit. Now, when comparing this with the original picture I started with this globular cluster, this already looks like a major triumph in theoretical astronomy, right? I mean, and that's no surprise. People have been working at this for a century. When you look at the center over here, you'll see that it is practically homogeneous, as already advertised. But if you look at some of the individual details, you can see that, for instance, over here, let me just get them a little bit closer together. Here there are stars that are relatively close together, just purely by Poisson noise. This is important because we had already seen that close stars and particular binaries will turn out to play a key role in the evolution of such systems. All right, then. Now, this was the starting. Let us see if we can pick up the final conditions over here. Let me just see if I can have another screen. All right. Trial. 50 frames we had. Okay, cool. So, points in phase space. Trial 0050.txt. All right, and then just do the rest again. 3 0 0. Right, 5 units, didn't we? Okay. Okay. So this is the same system, but then after the 100 time steps that we have looked at. And already from this, you can see in space what we already saw in velocity space, right? This, in fact, is the same scale as the previous plot. And you see that the whole thing is rather bigger than it used to be. So this particular part here would correspond to those points that are expanding away because they have interacted so strongly with what's going on in the center that now they're blowing off into space and they get lost to the environment. Ultimately, if this were a globular cluster orbiting in a spiral galaxy, for instance, like ours, these outer stars would be picked up and absorbed by the galaxy itself, right? So there's a certain tidal radius associated with this, which we will get to be talking about later. Again, looking at the center, you can't really see it very well at this. Well, maybe you can. Interestingly enough, you will see that over here, the center has become a little bit denser than originally. So whereas the Plummer radius, let me stop this for a moment, Plummer radius was originally something like the size of the screen here, at present it looks as if there is a little bit more of a concentration over here. And this we had already seen in velocity space. This was this smearing out, this thermalization that we saw in the center, right? And that can, of course, only be when the mass density is big. Remember, timescale is 1 divided by the square root of g times rho, where rho is the mass density. And when the mass density is bigger, such as in this case, you would expect the timescale to get shorter. And that's precisely what is happening over here. Well then, there are many more things that you can do from this. So let me stop by giving you an example of what you get put out. To begin with, I already mentioned this particular code tells you what you have done. Right, there's a log file that goes with it that specifies line by line precisely what you have put in. And thereafter, it specifies the number of the files and the time and the velocities that you have reached. An individual file like this, let's just simply take the final one over here, consists of a whole slew of numbers, which, well, doesn't even fit on this stupid screen. Let me see if I can do that a little bit smaller. No, we can do that. But it doesn't really matter. You have 3 positional coordinates, 3 velocity coordinates. You have the mass, which, of course, is the same for all the stars in here. You have the radius of this particular point as seen from the center of mass, and you have the absolute value of its velocity, so the speed. It is these two, for instance, that I've plotted against each other in order to show you the velocity structure. And any ordinary point plotter can pick this up from a text file and plot it for you. Already from a list like this, something suggests itself. In this particular choice of initial conditions, all the masses are equal. As you can see over here, okay, these are the masses. You in the back there were asking whether or not any programming was involved. And this is something where you could very, very easily, with almost no effort at all, do something meaningful with a code like this. You just put in three lines of code that specify a distribution of masses rather than specifying the same mass for all the stars. And just even doing this will already enrich the results that you will get from this enormously. For instance, one of the things that it will show is that big stars will have a tendency to accumulate in the center of such a mass distribution, and the little boys all get kicked out, right, just like in real life. So it is stuff like this that in principle we could do in parallel with the analytic part of the course as I intend to give it, right? Today I have emphasize this a little bit because I'd like you guys to get as much out of this course as possible. All right, and that is why I sort of spent a little bit more attention today on the numerical side of things than I typically would when following the book. There are several things in the book which I will also dwell upon that relate to actually getting results, getting real numbers out, but not so very much. Most of it is rather analytical, and I intend to follow that, but I thought it would be useful to show this to you right now, because now is the time that you can still make a decision, either whether or not we want to do this stuff in parallel to the course, and or whether or not you'd want to follow to attend Professor Portugis-Swart's lectures.